1776 is a masterpiece, I say. That's a review written by Daniel Sherrier that begins with a quote from the Broadway musical itself, 1776. Well, I'll never appear in the history books anyway, John Adams says. Sherrier continues, he's wrong, of course. A library's worth of history books and biographies focus on, or at least mention, John Adams. And not even just that. He's become a familiar figure of stage and screen. Think of the Broadway musical Hamilton that referenced him as an offstage character. And several years earlier, the HBO miniseries John Adams earned several shelves worth of Emmy Awards. But to me, the definitive dramatic interpretation of Adams can be seen in 1776. The stage musical and 1972 movie make us believe a Congress can sing, and that alone is an extraordinary feat. The musical reinterprets the story of the Declaration of Independence, specifically the political fight as the Continental Congress decided whether to declare independence from Great Britain. It takes liberties with the details, and it is no substitute for reading about the actual history, but it's entertainment, as we know, first and foremost, and no musical can capture the full complexity of all these historical figures, but 1776 captures exactly the right spirit to celebrate Independence Day. John Adams is the central character. William Daniels originated the role on Broadway, and he plays himself masterfully in the movie. Adams' chief allies are Benjamin Franklin and Thomas Jefferson, while John Dickinson serves as the main antagonist. Political debates tend to be tedious affairs, so how on earth does a show about one work so well? It's not just the songs, though most of them are great. It's what's at the heart of the songs, dialogue, and blocking. John Adams believes in something. He believes in it passionately, to the point in which he's staked his entire life and reputation on this idea. He's imagining a better world, and he's determined to unite others around his cause. He wants and needs people to see what he sees. It's right there in the excellent final song. But he's not well-suited for this task. He's obnoxious and disliked. That cannot be denied. Adams is anything but a diplomat or a natural politician, but he is stubborn and tenacious. He displays a compelling mix of flaws and strengths. Adams is one of the more relatable founding fathers, and that works to the musical's benefit. The man was no demigod. None of them were. And the musical never pretends otherwise. As a musical, 1776 indeed entertains, and it's even a little whimsical at times, with witty dialogue and colorful songs such as "Sit Down, John," but Mr. Adams, and he plays the violin. It could easily be mistaken for a sanitized historical romp. While it includes some romping, it has much more going on for it. The exchanges with Abigail Adams allude to the hardships on the home front. "Mama Looks Sharp" describes the experience of a typical young soldier. The script acknowledges the moral compromises needed to ensure political unity, particularly on the issue of slavery, which adds a very painful note of failure to what is otherwise a remarkable achievement. And the entire time, the show understands that the odds were against the American Revolution and that these men risked being executed for treason. But they followed their convictions anyway. The musical takes its subject matter seriously, but it doesn't take itself too seriously. It goes on to strike exactly the right balance between entertainment, reverence, and humanity. That from a review by Daniel Sherrier found in And the Quest for Pop Culture. Sherrier makes the point strongly that John Adams is the central character and that he believes in something, believes in it passionately. John Adams believes up to the point in which he staked his entire life and reputation on this idea. He's imagining a better world, and he's determined to unite others around his cause. He wants and needs people to see what he sees, words of Charrière. But what happens when the actor playing John Adams believes in something passionately to the point in which he's rooting his creation of the character itself in the need for others, for Adams' fellows in the Continental Congress, and for actor Ray Hopkins, the audience in the theater, to recognize the powerful responsibility to imagine a better world and to help bring it about. When an actor like Ray Hopkins inhabits a character like John Adams, it's bound to anchor the entire production and give it an extra impact. Not to mention that the founders of Diva Productions, Paige and Bob Bielitsky, believe in their very bones in the power of theater to make an impact like that. Paige Bielitsky is the artistic director, and Bob Bielitsky has the role of Benjamin Franklin. And Diva Productions, in collaboration with Actors Circle, will present the Tony Award-winning musical 1776 the final 2 weekends of June at West Granton Intermediate School, performances June 18th through the 28th. And this is a special production because they've received support through a grant from America 250 PA, the Pennsylvania Commission for the United States Semi-Quincentennial, and this project is the only America 250 PA grant supporting productions in Northeast Pennsylvania selected to help commemorate this historical national milestone through the performing arts. Paige Bielitsky and Bob Bielitsky paid a visit to the WVIA studios with actor Ray Hopkins, who plays John Adams, to talk about the musical 1776 as they prepare to open next Friday, June 19th, and about why they wanted to take on the musical in 2026.
I really, really wanted to do this musical. We haven't done musicals in a while, and this is one I've always wanted to direct. And I thought, well, you know, being the competitive person I am, I'm going to get this musical, and I did. We got the rights. We did it 18 months in advance, so there was no chance that we would lose it. And of course, we partnered with Actors Circle because two small theaters can't afford to do this, because at that time we hadn't gotten the grant money. But when the grant money came through, then we thought, wow, we need a bigger boat. We have to find a bigger venue. And we did. People were very generous to us.
We want to recognize the America 250 PA grant. They were very generous and made this production entirely possible.
Let's do logistics a little bit more. How many people are in the cast for 1776?
I think it's 24. I always get the number wrong. Is that 21 men? Might be 23.
23 men and two women.
Two women, so 25. All I know is there's a lot of bodies on that stage.
And did you have any trepidation about getting good singers for,
yes,
for all that cast?
Yes, I think you'd be a fool not to be worried about casting this kind of a show. But I was hopeful that because I did this very, very early, that I would have the turnout, and I did. And we were blessed with some beautiful voices. And not every male sings. Most do.
And we were also hoping we'd get the same response that we got when we did Chicago a while back. We thought, well, who's going to come out for Chicago for us? You know, I mean, where are we going to find all these dancers and all these triple threats that we needed? And again, it came through.
Have you worked with Diva and Actors Circle before, Ray?
So I've worked with Actors Circle before, but this is my first time doing a Diva production, and not just because Bob and Paige are here, but I have had a wonderful time so far. Mm-hmm. And it has been very, very fulfilling creatively.
When did you last encounter 1776 in your theater lives?
I know that we saw it at PTPA. We also saw it many years ago, I'm going to say decades ago, at the Daily Grind in Carbondale. Mm-hmm. And in fact, one of the original cast members from that show is in our show. And so it was really kind of a full circle moment. He was very excited about auditioning. And of course, we cast him because he's wonderful.
And I've wanted to do 1776 all the way back since the bicentennial. I had the honor of seeing a performance of 1776 on July 4th, 1976, right there on Independence Mall. And we found out one of our cast members was actually in that production.
Really, the circle goes around and around.
Sometimes it's just meant to be. You know, you do a show and it's nice and everybody's happy and you do it and it's over and you move on. Every so often, something special happens. And this is special.
Now, we have to talk about the show when it was launched. 1969, was it? The world was a different place in 1969.
Was it, though?
There was turmoil.
There was a lot of turmoil in 1969, for those of us who are around to remember that. Not unlike some of the turmoil that we face today. So, yeah, it's pretty close.
Did you two pick up the script? And did you say, what does this say to us today? When did you get to the question of, what does the show say to us today?
Yeah, we've had a lot of discussions about this because, you know, we've been around a while, Bob and I. And from the very beginning, even before we got the rights to do it, we were discussing what the 26th season was going to bring, because the 26th season was very important. It is the 250th anniversary of our nation. It is an election year, the midterms, which says a lot with the political turmoil that's going on. There's a lot of, you know, the No Kings rallies going on, which ties into the whole thing with King George. And so there's a lot of connections.
And there's a lot of political compromise that is in the show. Also, the slavery issue, which is very timely.
Ray, what drew you back to doing the show again?
So I absolutely loved working on it the last time. I was Thomas Jefferson, and I music directed at PTBA in 2019. And since then, I've just had an appreciation for this show. And after that production, I knew that I wanted to take on the role of Adams. It was kind of like a dream come true to be cast as John Adams. And a lot of people, when they found out that I was cast as John Adams, they said to me, oh, you're being so very American. That's unlike you. And I've had to come to the grips of this. At present, there is, as we said, a lot of turmoil and things that are going on. And I find that it is very difficult to align myself with the country, with what it's doing, versus what I would love for it to be. And I think that that is the perfect comparison to John Adams, in that he's fighting for a better world. He's fighting for, you know, as I say in my one song, I see Americans, all Americans free forevermore.
Does anybody see what I see? I see fireworks. I see the pageant and pomp and parade. I hear the bells ringing out. I hear the cannons roar. I see Americans, all Americans, free forevermore.
And that's actually what I've based this performance on. That thesis statement is what I'm going for.
And he brings it across. You
Absolutely.
Are nodding dramatically.
Absolutely.
Both of you.
You know, theater is a lot of things, but this play needs to be presented to the fullest possible extent of the talent that this area allows. It deserves that. It is beautifully written, and you need people to understand how important an issue this was. You know, we take our freedom for granted all the time. And if things are tough in the country, that's when we say, oh, this is happening, that's happening, and we question. But most of the time, we just get up and we go through our day because we're Americans. But we need to know why we're Americans and how it happened.
And this does it, even though it is a musical that is based in history, but there are
liberties. Yeah,
yeah, they take liberties.
To make it a show.
Yes,
right?
Entertaining, of course.
Bob, you mentioned compromise is going on in our world. How does the musical address the compromises that had to be made then?
Well, clearly right now it's the North, Northern colonies versus the Southern colonies. They have a different approach. You know, the Southern colonies were more for appeasement of the British crown, where the Northern colonies, they suffered. They had blood drawn And so that they're approaching it from different sites. So there was a lot of compromise that had to go between the two organizations to get all 13 colonies to unanimously agree to this Declaration of Independence.
And about the music itself, how is it coming together with the story? Integrated beautifully?
I think for me, from a director's point of view, I like that when it's funny and lighthearted, the music reflects that. But when serious issues come out, the music also is smart enough to address it. There's one song that is so, so dark, but it revolves around the issue of slavery and who does not have blood on their hands.
Molasses to rum to slaves. Oh, what a beautiful waltz. You dance with us, we dance with you, in molasses and rum and slaves. Who sail the ships of the Boston, laden with Bibles and rum? Who drinks a toast to the Ivory Coast? Hail Africa, the slavers have come. New England with Bibles and rum.
That's sung by Rutledge from South Carolina.
Do you have a range of songs, John Adams, some that are light and some that are...
Well, there are definitely a lot of moments in the show where I am going just nonstop, off the rails, screaming at everyone. But the culmination of the show ends with this song called Is Anybody There? And it's this moment that's more introspective, and we see very much into Adam's mind during this number. And even though it does have this big, grand moment, in a way it comes back down to a whisper, but in such a way that it allows me to explore every range of emotion that Adams is feeling. And of course we have, you know, Sit Down John, where I'm being bombastic and loud and obnoxious and disliked, as everyone says. But then we also have some fun numbers in there, like He Plays the Violin, which is sung with Franklin and Martha Jefferson. And then there are also some love songs with Abigail Adams. There's a whole range of emotions that I get to play musically that I am stoked to be involved with.
Just one song in particular, where he's railing against Congress with his piddle, twiddle, and resolve. And then just at the end of that song, he immediately launches into Yours, 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 which is a very beautiful romantic ballad.
They can't agree on what is right and wrong, or what is good or bad. I'm convinced the only purpose this Congress ever had was to gather here specifically to drive John Adams mad. You see, we piddle, twiddle, and resolve. Not one damn thing do we solve. Piddle, twiddle, and resolve. Nothing's ever solved in foul, fetid, fuming, foggy, filthy Philadelphia.
John, John, is that you carrying on? John.
Oh, Abigail, Abigail, I have such a desire to knock heads together.
I know, my dearest, I know.
Introduce us to Abigail.
Abigail Adams, truly the rock of the Adams family. And Kaylee, who is playing Abigail, and I have become such good friends because of this production. We talk almost every day now. And I believe that has helped us strengthen our characters. We both are very, very serious about acting and being in this production. And so that has been sort of the cornerstone of our work. It's like we appreciate each other as people, and therefore we can explore how the Adams felt for each other.
Tell us about the women.
Two women, and I have to be honest with you, I couldn't have dreamt that two women would walk through the door that were so perfect for these roles. Kaylee, as we were just talking about, she has this sweetness in her voice, this caring quality. And off stage, she and Ray, they act like an old married couple. It's so funny. I'm always saying to them, oh, you two stop, because they're bickering at each other and poking. And it's wonderful to see that chemistry, because you not only see it on the stage where you pray that it is, but you see it off the stage and you know that's why it's going to be successful. Now, Martha Jefferson, this is a nice story. Martha Jefferson just finished her freshman year at the University of Scranton. She was one of my students in the drama club at Old Forge High School. She has a brilliant voice, and she makes the absolutely perfect Martha. She's young, and the character is giddy and light, and it's wonderful. So the women are perfect.
And what does their music, the women's music, add to the story?
Abigail definitely has parts of the show that she is unique in her position, where she's guiding John, where she's advising John. And Martha is someone who was brought in to help Jefferson write the Declaration of Independence.
In the song, The Violin, he plays the violin. Martha talks about it's just not the music that won her heart. And it lets the audience just go down that road. And it's very cute, but it's very true. He could not concentrate. He wanted to go home to be with his new bride, and that wasn't happening. So they brought the new bride to him, which certainly helped. In Abigail, I find that Abigail, yes, she is a good partner to John Adams, but she pulls those reins tight when he's thinking that, you know, he's the smartest person in the room and no one understands except him. And she does not let him get away with anything. And that's what I like about her.
Yes, I think Paige put that perfectly. Though it's not my state, a line from the show. The sentiments of North Carolina, exactly.
Now, Bob, tell us how you're channeling your inner Ben Franklin.
Well, he's a little bit of a loose cannon. I mean, he's very thoughtful. He's very well studied. It's amazing that he had only like 2 years of formal education, and he was like a runaway teenager. So you can sort of relate to runaway teenagers today, where he went on to form what became the University of Pennsylvania. I mean, he was a master inventor. There were so many things that he invented, not just the bifocals, but things like the Franklin stove. Yeah, but
the Franklin stove.
Esoteric stuff like electrical terms, like he came up with battery, positive, negative, those concepts for the first time. So he was a real, true Renaissance man, and he grew from all of his experiences.
If John Adams is a bit of a hothead, what is the tone of Ben generally?
He keeps it light. He keeps it more on the light side. He's always grounding John. Says, come on, John. I mean, really, John, you know, that sort of thing. But Benjamin Franklin has his moments as well, especially toward the end, where he's trying to complain to John, you know, ease up on this slavery issue because you're going to jeopardize our entire cause.
Of course, Franklin was hopeful that it would be addressed when the new nation formed. And as we all know, that did not go well. And 90 years later, we had a real issue.
What about the costumes? You were very excited.
The costuming is phenomenal. We have a lady, Judith Mulder, who actually has her degree in costume design and taught at Montclair College in New Jersey. So she knows her history. She knows her stuff. And I have to tell you, she designed them all. She chose the colors, the material. She sews them all. She's amazing. The only thing that we did to help her was we covered some buttons. She is a wonder. And the costumes are breathtaking.
And the set, you've got a movable feast.
Yes, literally and figuratively. I've always wanted a turntable set. And of course, we can't do it at the Diva because we're tiny. And we couldn't do it at Actors Circle, although we could, but it'd be a really small turntable. But when the Scranton School District said that they'd love to be our partner, they gave us the West Intermediate Middle School, which we absolutely love. It's a huge stage. And our set designer and builder, Kylie Pimentel, came to me and said, I'm thinking about a turntable. And went, that's exactly what I want. Please do some designs for me. It is amazing. It is big. It holds all the men, plus Hancock and Thompson, who have to be on stage. And when the scenes take place away from Congress, the whole set turns and all you see are shutters on the outside of the building. It's phenomenal.
Yeah, she has to transition from Jefferson's bedroom to the full Congress. That's a major set change.
Yep.
You don't have to tip your hand, but you said you use the space.
We use the space. It's a unique space. When they went to see it initially, I was not there because I was busy working with my students for their show at Old Forge. So when I saw the space, what I had already directed, I had to change because I had a lot of action coming down a center aisle or a side aisle, and there aren't any. But there are a lot of doors. So we have a lot of people running in and out of doors, which is really wonderful because this school has two follow spots. So I can run wild in that auditorium, and that's right up my alley. I love it.
And because we're talking on WVIA radio, we want to shine a spotlight on our greatly missed Larry Voitko. We understand he's in the cast.
He is in the cast. We are so excited. He showed up for auditions. And of course, immediately I said to him, I'd love to have you read and sing for Rutledge because it's a magnificent song. And Larry has a magnificent voice. And he said, oh, I think that might be too much for me now. But he wanted to be Roger Sherman. And pretty much I said, well, if that's what you'd like to do, then it's okay with me. But he is marvelous. And he and Bob worked decades ago in Sweeney Todd. Mm-hmm. So we knew Larry from VIA, of course, and from local theater.
Oh. Did you, when you were doing the show before and music directing, Ray, did it stay with you so that even though you're in a role that you weren't in last time, did you have an easy in to learn the role?
Absolutely. I've basically had the timing down to the millisecond with all of the tracks, and so I've tried to be helpful to my other castmates who were getting used to these tracks for the first time by having my cues ready. But just having that sort of competitive edge has helped me because then I got to focus more on my lines rather than the music.
I will ask you then, and you gave us a very good answer, so you don't have to go beyond the answer that you gave us, but you were talking about the point of view that you are having as John Adams in the show. As you're all are rehearsing together, does 1776 doing it today feel different than even it was when you did it in 2019?
It definitely feels more timely. It feels more intense. Not to say that things weren't dissimilar in 2019, especially with what happened the following year, where we've gone down that path. And I think it's safe to say, you know, anyone who knows me knows that I am in opposition to what is going on right now. I too, like John Adams, view a world where we have these freedoms. And I think that coming from this place, especially my personal connections to it and how I fit into society versus how John Adams would have fit into today's society, I think that it's very important to realize, especially because a big joke online during the first presidency was, oh, I'll just move to Canada. And now looking back and seeing that the fire is ignited to, no, we can't just run away. We live in America. We are Americans. We have to make this country what we want it to be. And I think that that is a perfect base point. And getting to play John Adams really helps me feel like I'm getting a little bit of doing my part. And hopefully this inspires this production, this show. I hope it inspires people to be the change that they want to see.
And you two are nodding because it feels like that to you, that this is a show that isn't left in the tail end of the 60s. It's current right now, and it should make us ask questions about not just then, but then through the eyes of now and then learning from that, right?
Sure. Bob and I, we're kids of the 60s. I mean, we grew up in turbulent times, no less turbulent now. And it's our job in theater is to make people feel. You need to get an emotion, but it's your job to bring knowledge, to educate. And I mean that in entertainment terms, of course, but this is serious material. Yes, it has its light moments, but this is where we started. And I think people lose sight of that. And it's time. You need to stand up and be counted. Just like we did in the 60s. So here we are, you know, 1776, 2026. It's needed.
Tell us where and when.
Well, we are going to open on June 19th, and our first weekend is Friday, Saturday, Sunday, 19, 20, 21. The second week, we're doing Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. They're all at 7:30, except for the Sunday matinees, which are at 2. Tickets are easy to get. You can call either theater. You can go on the website for Actors Circle. You can go on Diva's Facebook page. You can call my theater, 570-209-7766, which is kind of funny. I love that phone number with this 1776. And there's a QR code if you go online. And it's at the West Scranton Intermediate School on Fellow Street in Scranton. And it seats 300, so we don't have to worry about running out of space. So get your tickets, and you can get them at the door. And the 250 PA people have come to some of our pre-events. They are happy with what we've done and what we are going to do. And they will be there to represent. So we're excited.
Paige Bilitsky, artistic director, and Bob Bilitsky, who has the role of Benjamin Franklin, with actor Ray Hopkins, who has the assignment of bringing John Adams to life, speaking with us about a very special production of 1776, the musical, music and lyrics by Sherman Edwards, and a book by Peter Stone. Diva Productions, in collaboration with Actors Circle, will present the Tony Award-winning musical 1776 from June 19th through the 28th. And as we heard, the production will run the first weekend, it's Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And then the second weekend, it's Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday at the West Scranton Intermediate School Auditorium, 1401 Fellows Street in Scranton. And again, the shows are Fridays and Saturdays at 7:30 p.m., Sundays at 2, and that extra performance, the second weekend, there will be a Thursday performance on June 25th, also at 7:30. You can call the number that has sevens and sixes in it, and that's the Diva Theater number, area code 570-209-7766, 209-7766. It's the Tony Award-winning musical, 1776, presented by Diva Productions in collaboration with Actors Circle, and it is Northeast Pennsylvania's only America 250 PA grant-supported production of the show. And you can see it at West Scranton Intermediate School Auditorium, 1401 Fellows Street in Scranton. And that's Fridays and Saturdays at 7:30 p.m., Sundays at 2, with an extra show on Thursday, June 25th, also at 7:30.